Well, it was nice, but I wouldn't say it was the best dessert in the world.
Well, I could have told you that, Mum. Baking a cheesecake? Ridiculous.
I was hoping I would get to meet this secret admirer, unless it was that elderly lady with the small dog.
Actually, Mum, that dog was a member of the infernal royal family, giving its aging slave some air.
Oh, don't be silly, Latimer. It was just a chihuahua.
There is no such thing as just a chihuahua, Mum. However, I did spy someone leaving in a hurry as we arrived. Perhaps he was your secret admirer.
Ooh, what did he look like?
Terrified, Mum.
Oh, perhaps he's shy. We've been in this lift for ages. Where exactly is it taking us, Latimer?
The tea lair, Mum. It commands the best view of New York.
Very odd architecture here.
Yes, Mum. It was built by Ivo Shandor.
Is it me, or does it feel a bit creepy here?
No, Mum. I feel quite at home.
Tea and Jeopardy with Emma Newman.
There's always time for a nice cup of tea and a spot of mild peril. Well, hello there, my lovelies. I do hope you're well and haven't had your creative vision battered by an overbearing studio exec. I'm Emma Newman, and I'd like to welcome you into my secret tea lair for polite conversation, abject geekery, a cheeky bit of cake, and of course, a nice cup of tea. Even though this building does give me the willies, the 360-degree view from this penthouse suite more than makes up for it. You can see practically everything from here. Central Park, the Empire State Building, the Flatiron Building. How marvellous! And such a beautiful day, apart from the rain cloud that's gathering over this building. How odd.
I'm sorry to disturb you, Mum, but your guest has arrived. A Miss Cameron Hurley.
Ah, splendid. Let's see her calling card. Cameron Hurley, Chief Instigator. Oh, there's a picture of Salome with, a decapitated head on a plate. Well, that's bold.
Am I to understand she is a chef, Mum? Because I know the perfect sauce.
Oh, Latimer, you have the most appalling sense of humour sometimes.
It's true, Mum, but I don't see why that is pertinent here.
Show her in, Latimer. For those of you who don't know, Cameron Hurley is an award-winning science fiction and fantasy author and advertising copywriter. She has won 2 Hugo Awards, and her essay, We Have Always Fought, on the history of women in conflict, was the first blog post to win a Hugo Award. Cameron's short fiction has also been published in multiple magazines and anthologies.
Ms. Cameron Hurley, Mum.
Hello, Cameron. Do come and sit down. How are you?
I am quite well. Thank you so much for inviting me today.
It is my pleasure. Would you care for some tea? Or coffee, perhaps?
Well, actually, probably coffee. Yeah, now that you're offering it, I think I'll take the coffee.
Well, we are in New York, and when one is in New York, one must offer coffee.
Exactly, yeah. People give you strange looks, so.
How do you take your coffee?
I will just take a black. I just straight up, like my whiskey, I will have this black coffee.
Marvellous. I can handle that. And I will pour. And I was wondering if you would like a slice of some Sasha Torte.
No, I think I'm good.
You're not going to have chocolate torte?
No.
But I don't actually. Oh my goodness! What does etiquette dictate? Would you like?
You know I'm American. No, I wouldn't want that.
No, my flabber is well and truly garsted. I don't know. Would you like an iced bun instead?
Do you have scones? Do you have like this clotted cream and scones? I will have that.
We do.
There we go.
Yes, we do. But now that we're in New York, I'm going to get rather befuddled because do you call scones biscuits? In America.
No, we have scones, we have biscuits. They're still 2 different things. So, no, pretty sure it's still scones.
Oh, marvelous. Oh, well, that's very good. Well, we actually brought some scones with us because obviously,
perfect.
You know, traveling abroad.
Well, clearly, yes.
Yes, you have to prepare for these eventualities. So, yes, we can definitely have a cream tea. So we have scones. Would you like them plain or with raisins?
Raisins sounds good.
Marvellous. And here's some strawberry jam and clotted cream from Cornwall.
Perfect. Oh, well, then I know it's the best.
Awesome. It is the best. Speaking as a Cornish lady myself, I can assure you it is the highest.
You can give me the guarantee. Good.
Yes,
good.
Yes, the Cornish guarantee. That was probably something much darker in history, like, you know, the guarantee of being wrecked on rocks and all of your stuff taken.
Being besieged, so, yeah.
Yes, exactly. It's a modern Cornish guarantee. Now, don't mind the chickens over there. We've had to set up a little pen for them. You're not allergic to chickens, are you?
I'm not. You know, my husband loves hugging chickens. Chickens who like to be hugged. Do they like to be hugged?
They do if you approach carefully.
Socialized. Oh, that's good. Okay.
Oh, they're remarkably social. Remarkably social. Sometimes a little bit too social, so but we don't talk about that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they have a passion for shoelaces, but the less said about that, the better. Now that we have coffee and cream coffee, that sounds wrong, but scones, I was wondering, in my invitation I asked you to bring a curio with you, and I was wondering what you've decided to bring today.
Well, today I actually brought, it is a little carriage drawn by a seahorse that is made of shells. And it is actually a real, like, you know, seahorse. My grandmother actually brought it back from Tahiti when she went to visit. She's from France, and she had some French relatives living in Tahiti, and she had brought that back. And so I have that one, and it has a little parasol or canopy or whatever over it that's a little shell, and it's just this little driver guy made out of shells and holding this little chain that hooks up to the little seahorse. And the little seahorse drives the little shell cart. So it's one of my little favorites here on my little curio shelf that I have.
That is just absolutely gorgeous. It is a curious curio.
It is. It is.
Now, I understand that you studied a master's in history specializing in the history of South African resistance movements. My goodness, what led you to study something that awesome?
I ask myself that a lot. I went to school, did my undergraduate work at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks, and I'm actually trying to figure out what had ended up leading me to South Africa. I think some of it was I went to Clarion, the Clarion West Writers Workshop, with Julian Brown, who is a history student. Now, of course, he teaches. He has a PhD, blah, blah, blah. But 15 years ago, we were all, you know, babies. So he was getting his degree in history, and we got to talking. You know, I was a history major, and I was interested, I think, also in resistance movements, particularly in the 80s. You know, growing up in the 80s, it was like, oh, everybody's fighting, and why is everyone fighting, and I don't understand, and the world's going to end. And I found it very fascinating. So we got into some conversations about that, and then when I went home back to Alaska, I actually started looking more into resistance movements, particularly in southern Africa, and I was just really fascinated with the upheaval, you know, against colonialism and apartheid in particular in southern Africa, but just that entire era, you know, that we had in the 80s where, you know, colonialism was really finally it was slowly falling apart, but I think the 80s really kind of saw that all come to a head, and you had all of these countries, you know, formerly under colonial rule that finally, you know, achieved independence, and then of course continued, you know, their struggle to become really independent, self-sufficient nations. And so it just really fascinated me. And what ended up happening was I actually looked at the African National Congress and the recruitment of students as, you know, as sort of like weapons of war against the apartheid state. And I came across this. It was a memo, I think, at one of their meetings, or it was a flyer or something, and it actually had said that Mkhonto we Sizwe, which is was the kind of militant wing of the African National Congress, was actually made up 20% female fighters. And I was like, what? that's a goodly number. That's 2 in 10. That's 1 in 5. If you look at any media representations, right, of resistance movements and female fighters, like nobody does that. And I went to all of the statistics for all of the resistance movements in Algeria, in Zimbabwe, all these other places, Rhodesia, Zimbabwe. And I looked at all these, and And they all went about the same. It was about 20%. You know, say 20, 25% of resistance movements were composed of women. And I thought, this is really fascinating. We never talk about this. It's just like, oh, the wonderful, you know, men go off and they, you know, go to war. And that led me to, well, how about in more traditional wars? You know, do women fight in there? And certainly they do. They have and they do. So that's what really led me there, and it kind of led me, it really became kind of the basis of a lot of what I write and what I'm really passionate about is looking at conflict and who it affects, who does it, and all the ramifications from it. So,
That's very, very cool. And did you actually travel to South Africa and study there, or was it like a distance learning program?
No, I lived there for, I lived in Durban for a year and a half. And, I was able to travel to Joburg and to Cape Town a couple times for research trips and things like that. So it was a really good time. It was a very interesting experience. The first 3 months, it's like, yeah, I'm on vacation. This is great. And then you realize it's your life. And you're like, wow, I live in South Africa. So it was a really, really great experience.
Fantastic. So, one of the questions that we get asked as writers an awful lot is, where do you get your ideas? And I'm always like, well, they're everywhere. How can you not have all of the ideas? You know, it's like living in a hoarder's house and just tripping over them all the time in our minds. Now, I'm actually going to ask you the same question, but instead about blogging, because for me, novel and short story ideas, oh, that's easy. But then as soon as I have to write a blog post or a guest post, especially guest posts, it's like tumbleweeds.
Yeah.
So how do you come up with all of these ideas for your blogging? Because you're such a prolific blogger.
Some of the time what ends up happening is, you know, there's rage of the week, right? I'm on Twitter, so there's usually several things to rage about on Twitter. Sometimes, you know, I've really backed off on that because, of course, I'm very busy and I realize kind of like that I can only get, you know, really, I can only spend that rage on so many things. But sometimes it'll just be a lot of the conversations that are going on online, something that I also want to dive into and give my two cents about. So some of it comes from there. A lot of it, though, when I do, again, and also, of course, from things that I read, right? You go off, you read an article, and you're like, wow, that's really sexist. And that happens to me. Unfortunately, it's like one of those things, and my husband says it, too, because, of course, you know, we've been together quite a long time now, and he's like, you know, and of course, you know, he considers himself very much a feminist and all that, but once you start critically look, like once you see these things,
you can never unsee
them.
Right? I know.
It's so funny the last few years, you know, he'll bring stuff up before I will. And he's just like, oh man, I wish they wouldn't have, you know, and we saw Wicked, I think last night. He's like, man, how many shows do you see that have like two female main characters and it's about their friendship? And that was so great. Like you never see that. And I'm just like looking at him. I'm like, I know, right?
This is an exact mirror of our household.
Yes,
very much so.
It's like everything's great until you see it, and you're like, oh man. And I'll be reading. I've been reading this thing about explorers, and I was reading this last night about astronauts, and I was like, man, they have like these exposés of like 8 astronauts, and I was like, really. Really, there's like 1 Chinese astronaut, and there are no women astronauts, and there are all the rest of them are from the U.S. And I'm like, can we get some, you know, other points of view in here? How are we just, you know, profiling this narrow, you know, pool of people as and holding them up as like these heroic astronauts? I'm like, there is a huge diversity of people, even with astronauts.
Yeah.
It gets very frustrating. And so you react to things, right? Like, you just react to the world around you. And also, you know, when I do, I've become quote-unquote known for doing these blog tours when my books come out. I've only done 2. But the Internet, you know, the Internet memory is very short. So, and then with those, I basically look at my book and I say, okay, what are the major themes that I played with? What are some of the major character issues, or what are the, you know, challenges I had? And I'll go through with those and I map out, right, like all 25 or whatever, 25, 30, I think I did like 30 last time, 25 or 30 before I do them. And that's very helpful because if I just have a title or a general idea, then I can sit down and just knock it out fairly quickly. That's why I can do blog posts. I don't do other things. I don't do readings. because I just, they exhaust me, and there's for like three people to do a performance, and I'm like, ah! Whereas blog posts, it's just, I can knock it out in an hour and it's done. And so I really like to do those. So so yeah, it's just a matter, it's like anything else. It's work. I mean, more and more, you know, I had a locust column I needed to turn in, and it was late because I'm totally slammed right now. But I asked Twitter. I was like, Twitter, please, what would you like me to write about? Because I am completely brain dead right now. And Twitter gave me ideas. So Twitter is where I go for my ideas. Yay, that's where all writers go for their ideas now. Now we know. So
we go there for so much.
Yes.
I love Twitter. I find it really hard to remember how I actually functioned in the world. You know, as a raging introvert who goes a little bit weird if I don't interact with people but don't naturally gravitate towards interacting with people,
yes.
It was a constant struggle.
Mm-hmm.
But Twitter is that perfect balance of it being, you know, the perfect virtual pub open 24 hours a day that I can walk away from when I need to.
Exactly.
It's gorgeous, isn't it? Gorgeous. Mm-hmm. So I feel like we're in a kind of a golden age of great television.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you have a favorite show, and if you do, what you feel it does better than any others.
Man, that's a really tough question, because I'm addicted to all sorts of, again, golden age television. You know, Orphan Black is really good. But immediately, you know, when you said that, I thought of Miss Fisher's murder mysteries. Strangely enough, yeah.
Well, so many people have been telling me to watch it, and I can't find a way to watch it.
Oh, no.
In the UK without going and spending money I don't have.
Yeah.
So is it really as wonderful as everyone is saying?
It's really fabulous. You know, I love dark TV, obviously. I think it's great. But occasionally you get really, really well done, fun mystery shows. And this is just extraordinary. Again, it's this whole idea of, you know, it's this 1920s woman who is actually a 1920s woman and is like, I can do what I want because I have money and a diaphragm. And she does whatever the hell she wants. And it's fabulous. And you know, and it's, you know, it's Australia. It's, there have people across, you know, different class lines. They talk about, you know, they get into a little bit with racism, and tons of with, you know, feminism. And because it's the roaring 20s. Like, that's what it is about. And we should have these shows. And it's just fun. It has their smoldering romance between, you know, her and the detective. It's like, will they, won't they? But in the meantime, she's sleeping with whoever she wants because it's the 20s and I have a diaphragm. And I'm like, yeah. So it's a really refreshing show. And it's just a lot of fun. And it's one of those ones that, yeah, every time I turn on Netflix, I'm like, oh, is the next season out? Is the next season out? And it's not quite yet. But, I think it's playing now. The third season is playing. I just have to wait for it to come to Netflix. So yeah, that's, I love it. You know, it doesn't give you cliched characters. And I think that's what we're seeing with a lot of television now where, you know, people are like, oh, diversity, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, diversity is how you get awesome characters because not everyone sounds and looks and talks and acts the same. And when we actually, you know, look at the real historical period, you know, let alone, you know, make things fantastic, you can come up with some absolutely extraordinary people. Some extraordinary people have lived in the world, and we don't, you know, feature them. We want to dumb things down to the lowest common denominator so that they will appeal to the most general audience. And that's not how people fall in love. You don't fall in love with perfect people or generic people. You fall in love with people who are a little bit off. You know, it's that little thing you see and you're like, oh, that's weird. And it's very attractive. So I think it does that very well.
I've got a great example of that actually with, the very first, I'm sure my husband won't mind me telling the world about this. Here, I'll open the window and tell New York because we're sitting here.
Okay.
But one of the first things that attracted me to my husband, and I'd known him for years and years and years, was a real weird way that he made his fajitas. There was a whole great big bunch of us who had known each other for years. We've been role-playing for years. I'd been his GM years ago and all this kind of stuff. So I knew him really well. And yet we went to this restaurant and everyone else was chattering and, you know, it was all really, really, really raucous and fun. But he was there in his own tiny little bubble making the most perfect fajita in the world and lining everything up. And there was a really, really kind of dedication to order. And I thought, this guy is not what I thought. And I want to know this man better.
windows into the soul. Yes.
Yeah, and it was that quirk. It was that oddity. You're exactly right. You know, that thing that we zero in on, which you, of course, can go the other way and make us run for the hills. But, yeah, in that instance, it was like, I might have found someone as weird as me. What else is love? So, yeah, I understand that. Yeah, that sounds like the perfect show for me. I really must try and find that in a way that I can afford.
Yeah,
I'd like to give you three phrases and ask you which one you would like to never, ever hear again. Okay, strong female protagonist, social justice warrior, fake geek girl.
Probably strong female protagonist, to be honest. Cause,
with the exception of the comic, because that's awesome.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, with the exception of that. Social justice warrior is actually really fabulous, right? That's like the awesomest troll term in like the whole world. Who would not want to be a warrior for social justice? Like, I play tank in World of Warcraft, I'm like, yeah! I will tank for social justice. Like, who wouldn't want that? And fake geek girl at this point, I just think it's funny. I think it's hilarious. So, but for some reason, it's like strong female protagonist, because it's said with such reverence and such, oh, it's something we should aspire to. And I'm like, you know, we just need to write interesting characters. So that's the one that I'm just saying, you know, if we could just stop talking about that. Nobody ever says, you need a strong male protagonist, or you have failed at writing because you do not have a strong male protagonist. What we actually mean when we say that is just something who's interesting and compelling and who has agency. It doesn't mean that they can, you know, bust through buildings in a single bound, or, you know, that they carry around a machine gun and that now they're strong. Because that's unfortunately what, like, people read that shorthand and they're like, oh, I'll just give her a machine gun.
Yeah.
How do you strong female protagonist? I'm like, no. And she's the one girl in the entire show. And, you know, where is the you know, hot pants and leather? And you're like, you know, can we have other women in the show? And, So it's one of those that I could love to see kicked to the curb for sure.
I think there are so many problems with all of the debate around female characters that could be solved in one fell swoop if there were just more, because there's so much pressure placed upon one or two female characters in all of the films and all of the shows, and they have to kind of be everything for us, and they can't possibly be everything for us.
Yep.
And it feels like they're carrying the weight of all of our rage from all of the years of being dished up this crap. And it's so frustrating, like, just please, just more, like Cora does really well. I'm only on season 3, so no spoilers, but there are so many female characters in Cora that you can have people screwing up and being wonderful and being strong and being vulnerable and being both at the same time across multiple characters, having complex relationships. Please, more of that.
Well, and I think Orphan Black is very good with that, too, where, you know, you have 8 of them, and so it's okay, you know, oh, I just want to be a mother. Oh, I just want to be, you know, there, you know, whatever. Like, they can choose from all of these different things, and it's not like they're choosing for all women everywhere.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I feel such sorrow for poor Black Widow right now, right? Because it's like everyone's freaking out, and I understand. I think it's ridiculous for some of the things they've given her. But that's all, you know. She's the one female person. If there were like 3 of them, and she, you know, that was her story, that'd be cool because there were other stories. But that is the story, right?
Yeah.
And so it's become a real problem. You know, you can't have one female character and give her, you know, entire story is about her lady parts. That's just, it's not cool. I agree. The solution is then have more women characters. You can do what you want. If you want to have, you know, this storyline that's totally stereotyped and boring or whatever, that's fine. I think it's stupid, but whatever. But if you have more of them, it's going to be like, oh, okay, well, that's her particular story, and yes, that represents one particular story, but now we have other stories because there are, like, over half the world is women.
I know. The rage. It's exhausting, isn't it? It's so frustrating.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's something... It's something that I've been thinking about quite a lot recently, actually, about socialization for women, and especially British women. My God, we have Britishness and female socialized. It's like, oh my God, how many negative modifiers am I carrying right now to actually express my anger about something?
I'm very upset. Yeah.
Yes, I'd like to, if it's not too much trouble, express a concern I have with something. Yeah, I mean, really, it's so, so difficult. Yeah. And, you know, especially in this time with, you know, so many battles that are being fought on so many levels for so many groups of people whose voices are just not being heard. And that's why Tea and Jeopardy exists, is because there weren't enough female voices in podcasting. Yeah. And I'm thinking, we've got to take this further. But, oh, my life, it's so hard against an entire lifetime of being taught to just smile and nod and, you know, internally rage.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's interesting times.
Mm-hmm.
So as someone who is known for, you know, writing angry things and saying things that people like me are quite afraid to say, but are working on, I would like to know what the last thing was that made you really belly laugh.
Oh, man. I find Twitter hilarious. I follow, my problem is, you know, I follow, you know, people like Mike Cole and Sam Sykes and Robert J. Bennett on Twitter. And, you know, those guys get rolling onto some of their conversations, and it's hilarious. See, that's a hard one. Sometimes, honestly, I'll get, comments on my stories and stuff that actually make me really laugh, or comments about me and things like that. And I'm trying to think of one of the ones that was good. I think I had written a Vice magazine. I wrote a story for Vice magazine that was basically like, you know, a poke at Gamergate and the Sad Puppies at the same time, you know, two for one. And I had, apparently there was a, and I didn't see this conversation, but some folks on Twitter were telling me about it, that folks were telling me that I must not be a gamer and I didn't understand gaming culture. I'm like, I think I was playing WoW at the time. Like, I've been playing since 2009. And I just found that hilarious. Because the thing is, I always find it hilarious that it's like there's nothing you can do to, and it reminds me of the Joanna Russ's How to Suppress Women's Writing. Because no matter how much, again, the fake geek girl, right? No matter how much of a geek you are, no matter, you know, if you've been watching Doctor Who for 30 years or whatever, no matter what the bar is, as soon as you hit that bar, the bar will change, right? So, well, that doesn't count. Or, oh, well, you need to be, you know, reading this and that and the other thing. I actually went out of my way, and I tell people this, I was talking to my agent, I think, about this, where when I went to Clarion, I realized I needed to read a lot of old school science fiction, because when I went to science fiction conventions, people are going to ask, well, have you read Asimov? Have you read Zelazny? Have you read, you know, and so I had to read it, and I read Bester and all these other people, just so that when people came to me, like, well, are you a real science fiction writer? And I could be like, yeah, boom, and quote at them. And so I find that very fascinating. Some of the reactions, I think, to some of the stuff that I write is really, and I know, and it's funny because, like, it's made to, like, people get real serious and they get all upset. And I laugh and laugh about it because I'm like, the fact that you're uncomfortable means I've done my job. And so, you know, they're coming at it where, you know, oh, this is horrible and I'm going to die. And I'm like, you're not going to die. This is actually really funny because I've been living in this world and you're just realizing that the world is this way. That makes me laugh. It's my Schadenfreude. So, I have a very grim sense of humor. I tell people that, people who have read God's War, I tell them that, you know, Nix's sense of humor is very, very close to my sense of humor. It's just very dry, you know, well, we're all going to die anyway, kind of humor. So the gnashing of the teeth of my enemies is very thing.
I think that's actually a very strong armor to have these days, a woman online. Yeah. And it seems like every 6 months, especially in the UK press, there is some person, generally male, who says, oh my goodness, there are all these women in science fiction and fantasy. It's like, oh my God, are we doing this again? We did this 6 months ago. And hello, we have been here. I'm nearly 39, and I've been doing this since I was, 11? No, younger. All my life I have been a geek.
Yep.
And it's just incredible that that feeling of being constantly erased again and again and again and again from all of the narratives. It's just so infuriating. And then when you actually show up, like you say, people saying, well, no, you can't actually be an example of this rarefied being.
It's like urban fantasy. Right. It's kind of a romance fantasy. And you're like, you know what? People do that to N.K. Jemisin. Well, it's kind of romance. And I'm like, she writes epic fantasy. God.
It's very upsetting. But anyway, on to a nicer thing. When I'm going to have a friend over for tea, I like to ask on the Twitters if anyone has got a question that they would like to ask if they were able to have tea, or in this case, coffee. And a very lovely chap called Paul said that he would like to know that if a new species of insect could be named after you, what kind of insect would you want to be named for, to use the American vernacular?
Well, that's a two-part question. Because on the one hand, I'm like, I would like to be the most deadly, disgusting thing in the whole world. And then I'm like, actually, I would be really cool if it was like some kind of designer bug, right, that we bred to be really helpful to, like, cure cancer or to build bridges or something like that. Because, of course, you know, the Gosmer books were all about bug magic and how, you know, you use bugs to actually, you know, heal people and drive your technology and all of that. So I think the next line, that when we go to designer bugs, when we get to that stage, I think the whole line should just be named for me. I'm down with that.
I saw some headline which I didn't dare click on, which was about something to do with experiments with spiders and grapheme or something. And I was like, no, don't do any experiments with spiders. Have we not educated you sufficiently with our genre at all? What are you doing?
Well, you know, I had actually gotten a lot of ideas for the bug stuff. You know, they use hornets to sniff out explosives. Like, they can actually train them to do that. Yeah, it's really cool.
Just wait one moment. How on earth does one train a hornet to do anything? Are they just like the embodiment of evil?
Food on the explosive. I don't know how they did it, but they actually can use hornets to sniff out explosives the way they use dogs. So I thought that was fascinating. Yeah.
I don't know. If someone was like in a meeting and said, look, we could use hornets, I'd be like, no, let's use the dogs.
They're easily trainable.
Yes, they're nice, they're fluffy, we can stroke them. Not the evil hornets of doom, but obviously it works for some people. How strange. So I saw you talking on Twitter the other day about how very, very soon you're going to be going away and writing and not doing interviews and things like that. Is that because you've got Empire Ascendant coming out in October and a million things to kind of do for promo and writing?
Yeah, I'm on deadline weekend. On Tuesday, I have Empire Ascendant structural edits due. And I thought I was good, right? I had like 6 weeks to do these. I always do this to myself. And I'm like, oh, I'm good. And I went over the editorial letter. Yeah, this is fine. And I did everything. And I sat down to do my final line edit. I'm like, oh, no, this is a mess. No, it's all wrong. This is all wrong. So I'm frantically trying to finish that. But yeah, what ends up happening is, and I found this to work very well, and I actually got the strategy from reading Book Life by Jeff Vandermeer. You need to be on, you know, sometimes you really need to be on. You're engaged online, you're reading your reviews, you're absorbing things, and then you need to be off, especially if you're, again, talking about extreme introversion. If you're an introvert, in order to go and create things and make things, it's good to turn off the voices, because the voices just, you know, after a while you have to just do your own thing. So, yeah, what ends up happening is, you know, I'm very aware that, you know, we're looking at, it's May right now, I will have all of September and all of October dedicated to, you know, promotional work for Empire Ascendant. In the meantime, I have The Stars Are Legion, which is my space opera. That is due October 1st. So that's fun. Yeah, that's halfway done right now. And then I have an unannounced project where I need to turn in the rest of the work for that one July 1st. And I need to just stop everything. I also have, you know, I had a bunch of, you know, and some of it was I lost all of April. You know, April, the whole Sad Puppies, you know, nonsense happened. And I got the Atlantic article. I guess there was someone from the Atlantic came to me and said, do you want to write this article? I'm like, yeah, sure. And that led to a bunch of other stuff. I had two commissioned stories from that. I had some other interview stuff that came from that. And it became really crazy. So thank you, puppies. It was fabulous. I got a lot of deals out of that. I got paid. I got paid to wank about the Hugos. It was great.
I'm sure they will be so delighted.
I'm sure they are. Social justice tanking. It was crazy. April was crazy. And then now I need to get to work. Plus 18 months for me have been weird because, you know, people don't see the 10 years, right? They see like, yeah. Oh, here's this person on the internet that has this article in The Atlantic and this thing in Vice Magazine and you seem real famous and you're just like, you know, I still have a day job. I'm not any different than I was 18 months ago. It's just people are buying things from me now.
So have you got your elevator pitch for Empire Ascendant sorted yet, or is that something that comes much, much later?
I don't know that I so much have an elevator pitch. You know, it's basically the Empire Strikes Back of the series. So, you know, literally, and that was my agent was like, The Empire Strikes Back, what a great title! Oh, I can't use that one. Because it is what it is. You know, the first book in the series is these, you know, two worlds, parallel worlds colliding, basically. You know, the bad guys are you, is the conceit of the novel. And so in the second book, you know, we have that the promised clash is upon us. The war is happening. You know, one world's going to live and one world's going to die. And this is the penultimate book. So I love the idea. Again, I like to do my dark second books as if I don't write everything else dark, but this is just, you know, in order to get you ready for, you know, the Ewoks in the third book, you know, you have to have the darkness in the second one. So that's what I'm working on now is knocking that one out.
I like the idea of getting people ready for Ewoks. It's like, what would you do? Like, here is all of the tea and here are blankets. Here are some really, really, really scary, terrible things to kind of, you know, get you ready for this. They're like little teddy bears. Oh, okay. So the other thing I like to ask my guests when they come to tea is, if you could pick a theme tune for your life, what would you choose and why?
You know, when I was at Clarion West and I was writing the short story for what would eventually become God's War many, many years later, I was listening to the Mission Impossible soundtrack, and there is a song called They Came In, and it's by the Butthole Surfers. It's a really great song to kind of just get jazzed up and write by. And I always loved that when I listened to it on repeat a lot when I was working on that story. So yeah, I think that would be my theme song.
Okay, so the reason I ask is because the chickens that have seemed very harmless in the corner over there are actually quite unusual, and they're quite musical chickens, and they seem to know all of the songs that I ask them to sing.
Well, that's handy.
It is very handy, actually. Yeah. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's very not handy if something is mentioned in passing that happens to also be a really irritating song, and then they start up, and then there's arguments with the butler, and it's all very, very difficult. But anyway, in this circumstance, it should be fine. So, little chickens, could you sing They Came In by the Butthole Surfers, which is a phrase I never thought I would ever say in my life. Oh, there they go! They're singing it! So they know that one too. Well, there you go. I bet you didn't think when you came to tea in a penthouse in New York that you would have that song sung to you by chickens.
I was going to say, I was just impressed that they were hugging chickens. The fact that they can sing is, you know, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. I must work out where they came from. They were sent as a gift by someone mysterious, so I must figure out where they came from. But anyway, another day, as you say, there's just so much to do, isn't there? So let's have a look at the coffee pot. Well, I think my teapot is definitely empty, and I'm afraid the coffee pot is too. So I think it's probably, the weather looks like it's taking a turn for a worse out there. I think it may be time for us to say our goodbyes. But I wanted to say thank you so much for coming by this afternoon.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And I'm delighted that you are a fan of scones and clotted cream.
Oh, that's the best, yeah.
Yes. I feel we could be lifelong friends now.
Yes, now it's allowed. Now it's allowed.
I was very worried when you turned down the chocolate tort. Right. I don't know.
How
I don't know
about
this.
Eat chocolate? And I was expecting scones. I was like, oh my gosh. I had them for the first time when I went to Brighton, and I'm like, this is amazing. I have this again.
I'll be sure to bring some along the next time I see you.
Excellent.
So if you just, the butler will show you the way out, and just head on down the corridor, and the elevator is at the end.
All right, thank you.
Lovely. Take care now.
You too.
Bye. Bye.
Ooh. Oh, that thunder is so loud. The storm must be right above us.
I don't think that's a storm, Mom.
Oh, I think the lightning has hit the building.
Don't worry, Mom. The building will be able to channel the energy.
Oh, Cameron was out in the corridor. We have to go and see if she's all right.
I wouldn't recommend that, Mom.
Latimer, the corridor, the rest of the building, it's gone horribly squiffy.
Shall I make another pot of tea for you to enjoy while it blows over?
But there were strangely coloured clouds and demonic dogs and a throne with a creature sitting on it.
Was it a chihuahua, Mom?
No!
Ah, that's a relief.
I don't know how Cameron is going to get out of the building. I don't see how she can get past that throne.
She could come back in here where it's safe.
I don't think that's her style, Latimer. Oh, I think I can hear something. Listen.
Only a god may pass. Are you a god?
You're goddamn right I am. Who the hell are you to demand that I answer?
Oh, sorry. I thought you were... Well, it doesn't matter. Carry on.
Oh, Cameron got past. It seems more reasonable than I thought. I think I'll have a go.
Only a god may pass. Are you a god?
Oh, I couldn't possibly claim that I'm a god. It's just not cricket. But I am the queen of a virtual kingdom. Does that count?
Oh, dear.
Puny mortal, I will destroy this world and feast upon your soul.
Well, that escalated quickly.
Good news, Mom. The tea is ready.
Well, I suppose there's nothing for it. Whilst we take our last cup of tea before the end of the world, I can't help but feel what a terrible shame it is that we never got a chance to launch some Tea in Jeopardy merchandise. We've been looking into options, and I was going to say that there will be some news coming soon for those who are interested. Ah, well. Oh, and it looks like I'll miss the new Mad Max film as well. And the new Star Wars film. Oh, honestly, Latimer, is there nothing to be done? Latimer?
Only a god may prevent the destruction of this world. Are you a god?
Is that you under all that, Bertie?
Latimer?
Bertie!
Latimer, it's been an age.
Several ages, in fact.
I haven't seen you since the mass slaughter at the Temple of Ultimate Evil.
Yes, good times.
I'm so sorry, I had no idea this was your world.
Well, one doesn't like to brag.
Well, in that case, I'll call off the apocalypse. They are a little passé. And so much work.
And I trust you will leave the soul of the last human you spoke to intact.
Oh, if you think she will be missed. It's a long way home on an empty stomach, you know.
I think one or two people may notice.
Oh, you're a sharp one, Latimer. All right, I won't eat her. This time. Toodle-pip, old chum.
Oh, there you are.
Apocalypse averted, Mom.
Splendid. Did you have a hand in that, Latimer?
I might have played a small part in it, Mom.
Find us a new tea there, would you, Latimer? Perhaps somewhere less urban.
Very good, Mom.
You've just listened to an episode of Tea and Jeopardy, hosted by Emma Newman and co-written with Peter Newman. Go to www.teaandjeopardy.com to find previous episodes, and www.patreon.com/TeaAndJeopardy to become a Bless Poppet.